Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we'll have in-depth coverage of the Dharma Center's 50th anniversary in Garberville, a report in California with 13 agencies working together to help monarch butterfly populations, and the Humboldt Sheriff's oversight discussion being revisited due to a Brown Act violation. But first, a rundown of today's top stories and headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off in Humboldt News. The Humboldt County Office of Education hosted its annual celebration honoring California's Day of the Teacher by recognizing outstanding educators with Excellence in Teaching Awards. This year's ceremony, held at the Sequoia Conference Center in Eureka, recognized 5 teachers for their exceptional work in the classroom. With a combined 100 years of teaching experience, these educators were joined by over 150 colleagues, friends, and family members to celebrate their achievements. The Excellence in Teaching Awards program has been a staple of the Humboldt County Office of Education since 1986. The awards recognize teachers from transitional kindergarten through the 12th grade who have been identified as exemplary by their coworkers, parents, or students and have a minimum of 5 years of teaching experience. This year's honorees were Amber Coley of Dow's Prairie Elementary School, Crystal Fennell of Stanley A. Murphy Elementary School, Jennifer Harvey of Alice Burney Elementary School, Hope Von Werlhoff of Washington Elementary School, and Rachel Whitaker of Sunny Bray Middle School. The event was highlighted by contributions from Humboldt County High School students. The Fortuna High School Culinary Arts Program created appetizers under the guidance of Stacy Niemitz. The awards themselves were created from engraved wooden cutting boards by Ian Hall's Career Technical Education students. Next, an update on a feather alert. On May 13th, 14-year-old Dandesne Moorhead, also known as Sparrow, who had been reported missing, was located and safely returned to his family. Good news indeed. The Klamath National Forest has completed the May snow surveys. These measurements are part of a statewide California Cooperative Snow Survey Program. This program helps the state forecast the quantity of water available for agriculture, power generation, recreation, and stream flow releases later in the year. May continued the trend of spring meltout. While some storms have passed through the region over the last month, nothing of significance was added to the April snowpack. In fact, spring conditions are well underway at all snow survey sites, with only the highest locale in the Middle Boulder Basin retaining measurable snow. Across all snow survey measurement points, snow depth was at 0.8% of historical average, while the snow water equivalent, a measure of water content, was also at 0.8% of the historical average. News from the Fortuna Police Department. Today, Thursday, May 14th, at approximately 1:40 a.m., an officer with the Fortuna Police Department attempted a traffic stop on a silver Mercedes sedan around the 2600 block of Kenmore Road for a vehicle code violation. The vehicle failed to yield to the officer's signal, and a short vehicle pursuit was initiated. The vehicle came to an abrupt stop, and the driver was safely taken into custody. Upon taking the male driver into custody, officers removed a concealed handgun from his waistband. The driver was identified to be a 16-year-old. The teenage driver was arrested and booked into the Humboldt County Juvenile Hall for carrying a concealed weapon on his person, possessing a firearm with an altered, removed, or obliterated serial number, being a minor in possession of a handgun, vehicle evading, and being unlicensed. In state news, the California Department of Public Health has updated California women, infants, and children, also known as WIC, food benefits statewide. Expanding access to healthy foods and offering greater flexibility and choice to WIC families. The changes include more whole grain options, additional yogurt flavors, additional plant-based milk alternatives, expanded access to canned fish, and the ability to purchase fresh herbs from the fruits and vegetables benefit. The updates were implemented in response to a USDA final rule issued in 2024 that incorporates recommendations from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine and dietary guidelines for Americans. The revised foods are intended to strengthen nutrition security, promote healthier dietary patterns, and better meet the evolving nutritional needs of individuals participating in WIC. The updated food benefits apply to all California WIC participants, including pregnant, postpartum, and breastfeeding individuals, infants and children up to age 5, and WIC has authorized grocers to update inventories and point-of-sale systems to reflect the new authorized food list. In late-breaking national news for Thursday, May 14th, the United States Supreme Court ruled via emergency order that mifepristone, also known as the abortion pill, could continue to be mailed to patients via telehealth providers. This ruling pauses a Fifth Circuit decision that would have banned such shipments. It likely means that the drug can be shipped for a number of months while lower courts handle their own rulings on the matter. It is unclear whether a final decision would reach the Supreme Court or how the court might rule if the issue is brought to them. And now, to our main stories. I'm April Lewis. This is KMUD News. The Dharma Center in Garberville recently celebrated its 50th anniversary. KMUD News was there to report. The Dharma Center in Garberville is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Dharma centers form the center of local Buddhist practice and provide a space to study and meditate, along with events. To mark the occasion in Garberville, they held a 50th anniversary open house, which included a morning meditation, lunch, speeches by the center's founders, and live music. The event was well attended, and there was a spiritual and nostalgic feeling in the room. Memories, smiles, and laughter permeated the event. Many attendees have been involved with Garberville's Dharma Center for decades, plus some newer faces. We'll begin with the current manager of the Dharma Center, Florina Nigley, who expressed appreciation for those who attended and the special energy present at the center.
So first, thank you for helping me organize this. And I know you all know, I mean, just coming in here, the energy is just loaded, right? With goodness. And the joke is always, right, you sit and then 10 other people feel guilty that they're not here.
Florina was followed by a founder of the Dharma Center, Timothy Clark, who gave a history of building the center and how much remains the same.
So we got this place and it was pretty much of a mess, but we redid the floors, we put in carpets, really did a nice job on it. And it's still the same original, everything's pretty much the same. The shrine, I have a picture of it. The shrine was the same, except we had, of course, a tonka in the middle, and we had this crystal ball. This crystal ball came from Padma Jong, which was a meditation country retreat in near Kovalo.
Timothy Clark also told a story of how Garberville's Dharma Center came to be blessed by the Dalai Lama.
We met with the Dalai Lama, and Lama Dawa asked him if he could bless our center. He told us about the center we had here. And the Dalai Lama said, yeah, well, he wrote a letter saying that he gave it a name, and he said it should be eclectic, you know, it should be, you know, for whatever kind of spiritual, you know, I think mostly Buddhist is what he was talking about, but, you know, you shouldn't limit it to Zen or Tibetan or whatever, just, you know, it should be a Buddhist center. He named it Thupten Choling, which means Dharma place, eclectic Dharma place.
Fellow founder Robin Burns then gave her own remarks, speaking of a magical time during the Dharma Center's founding 50 years ago.
It was a magical time in the beginning, just because of the people just came together all at once. that it was kind of remarkable how that 22 people or whatever it was, just and I guess that the word got around. And
lastly, an audience member spoke of how the Garberville Dharma Center's unique organization has led to a space that has stayed fully collaborative throughout its history.
The other thing I want to add in the broader picture of this place, and I've always been grateful for this, is we don't have a board of directors. We don't have to do fundraising in any kind of strict sense. We don't have board meetings, you know, and all the things that go along with another organization. So it's been just almost, I know the cliche, a Taoist experience of having a group that just comes together and cleans the place, pays the rent, and has functions here. And it's so wonderful not to have to go through all the meetings and discussions and be a nonprofit and all that stuff.
If you would like to learn more about the Garberville Dharma Center, you can contact the manager, Florina, at 707-223-2005. Current classes include Tai Chi on Thursdays, Meditation Sangha on Wednesday evenings, Hatha Yoga on Tuesday mornings, and much more on the center's weekly calendar. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Due to lack of public access to the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors chambers, a discussion on civilian oversight of the sheriff's office has been redone. Daniel Mintz reports.
The length of Humboldt County Board of Supervisors meetings is making public comment difficult, and a hearing on forming a sheriff's oversight committee had to be redone because of it. Supervisors violated the Brown Act, a state law that sets standards for public disclosure and participation, at their April 28th meeting. There were issues with the call-in feed, and because the meeting lasted into the early evening, the county administrative building was closed and locked, barring public access. So the matter was taken up again at the May 12th meeting, and in an unusual move, Board Chair Mike Wilson read directly from a written staff report, which dryly states that, quote, certain members of the public may not have been able to provide public comment regarding this matter, without further explanation. And Wilson was called out on it by Southern Humboldt resident Thomas Mulder, who is a former county planning commissioner.
I will say that is the most gaslit response statement I've heard from the beginning ever in my life. The public was locked out of a meeting in direct violation of the Brown Act. You cannot have a meeting where the public doesn't have access to even sit in there and stare you in the eye while you deliberate. So I cannot believe, I'm appalled that everyone up there is just saying, oh, the public didn't have access. That was a direct violation of the Brown Act, and there should be an apology. That was the most egregious violation of the Brown Act I've ever seen.
Other speakers also commented on the violation, with one saying, quote, I really didn't appreciate hearing somebody in the chambers laugh during the last meeting when we were told the doors were locked. That was really inappropriate. The excessive length of meetings makes it hard to know when an agenda item will be heard. And another speaker noted that, quote, it looks like today, once again, it's pretty late into the day before the public is getting to talk about this. Carolyn Griffith, who represented a group of residents requesting oversight last March, described the April 28th meeting as, quote, the unfortunate meeting that we're having to redo. The more inclusive public comment session on May 12th included a greater mix of opinions. During the previous discussion, Sheriff Billy Hansel said oversight isn't necessary due to the community's high level of trust in the sheriff's office. McKinleyville resident Caleb Donner-Awesome disputed that.
As an IHSS caregiver who works with people with intellectual disabilities, there's a large amount of fear and distrust with our sheriff's office, especially around interactions with people having mental health crises, and with the lack of accountability when deputies brutalize us. example being a 2023 incident with Deputy Campidonia exhibiting severe police brutality and vindictiveness when being met with barely a slap on the wrist by Sheriff Hansel and costing the county $150,000. This is just one of many examples which show a clear need for increased accountability. I also want to point out a misleading argument that has been made by the Sheriff's Office in order to discredit this committee. They have continued to call this oversight committee as only serving special interests for 5 to 6 people, when in reality a call for an oversight committee has been happening for many years.
The incident Donner Awesome referred to involved a man whose car window was smashed by a sheriff's deputy after allegedly not following an order to roll the window down. In a letter, Hansel said the deputy's actions, quote, may have been legally justified, but they violated the office's use of force policy, and the deputy, quote, will be undergoing additional de-escalation training. But some speakers question the need for an oversight committee. Fortuna resident Crystal Lofane related her family's surprisingly positive experience, considering its context.
Sheriff Hansel and his team are amazing. I know some of them personally, but also I have watched Sheriff Hansel in action before he became sheriff. I have a son that is in prison serving time now, his second term. Sheriff Hansel has been nothing but supportive of my family, and we have had conversations about different things. I have seen him in action. I saw him when my son went to prison the first time, and he was so compassionate and so understanding. And I am just upset about, I agree, you guys are pushing this too fast. And all these people that are bashing him, they're wrong. They are wrong. They are absolutely wrong.
A majority of supervisors voted to form an ad hoc committee to develop an ordinance establishing an oversight committee that will be up for consideration in September. Supervisors Rex Bone and Michelle Bushnell voted against doing so, with Bone saying, quote, I don't think this is needed, and Bushnell saying there are already layers of investigation, as she put it, such as the county's district attorney's office and the state's attorney general's office. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The California Department of Fish and Wildlife recently released a multi-agency report on monarch butterfly populations. KMUD News spoke with the department's pollinator coordinator to learn more. Hilary Sardinas is the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's statewide pollinator coordinator. In this role, she supports conservation related to California's pollinators, including bees and monarch butterflies. We spoke with Hilary about a recent report she was involved with by the California Multi-Agency Monarch and Pollinator Collaborative, uniting 13 different agencies at both the state and federal level to identify priority conservation actions and research needs for the Western Monarch Butterfly. The report is titled Conservation Priorities for the Western Monarch Butterfly in California. Pollinator coordinator Hilary Sardinas began the conversation by discussing how the report came together.
In 2021, after the lowest year on record for overwintering monarchs in the California coast, a few agencies, including the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, got together and realized that we needed to clarify what we could be doing to help recover the population. So we invited additional agencies that were working on this topic, both state and federal agencies. And we decided to form the California Monarch and Pollinator Collaborative. And the California Monarch and Pollinator Collaborative is 13 state and federal agencies whose mission is really to catalyze monarch conservation, information sharing, and work around pollinators in California. And one of the things we decided to do was review some existing reports, including the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies' 50-year Western Monarch Conservation Plan, to understand how the goals and actions that were identified in that plan could be translated to the landscape of California, we also wanted to prioritize the actions so that we had a sense of which ones we needed to complete with a little bit more urgency to really accelerate that on-the-ground conservation and education and even research and monitoring of monarchs in California.
What were some of the main takeaways that you found from the report itself?
So there are a number of different actions in the report, and it's really designed to be something that different people can come to based on, you know, if you're a member of the general public or you work for an agency and find something that really fits within actions that you could take. For example, for members of the public, one of the things we're emphasizing is trying to participate in community science projects, such as the Western Monarch Count, which is the annual census of monarchs at overwintering sites in California, or planting early season milkweeds in your yard to help give monarchs something during that first generation where their population really needs a boost during the breeding season. But we also identified just really big factors. For example, there's no consistent definition of a monarch breeding habitat in the West. So trying to work together with partners to come up with how many milkweeds do you really need in a given location and how far apart should those be to optimize monarch use of them. Other topics that we talk about are a big gap, something that hasn't been addressed, really improving our understanding of how pesticides impact monarchs, where they expose. A lot of the studies to date have used honeybees as surrogates instead of butterflies. And so, you know, how well do those translate, and are monarchs being exposed, and is that a factor in their decline? So we're trying to pull from a lot of different topics to give people a list of different things that they could engage in instead of just saying, this is the one thing to do. It's really trying to give people this opportunity to figure out how they can work together on conservation, because we recognize that the problem is quite large and we need an all hands on deck approach to be able to make a difference.
I have one last question, which is just what's next after this for the working group and any other information you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, we're hoping that people take this report and use it to start implementing actions. We want to hear what people are doing and hopefully partner with them. There's a lot of different working groups throughout the state that are working on monarch conservation. For example, there's the overwintering managers working group. This is comprised of people that manage monarch overwintering sites. There's a rangeland group. So we're hoping people tie in and kind of use this as a bit of a roadmap for how to do more monarch conservation. And we really want to roll up our sleeves, get our hands dirty, and try and make progress on a lot of the objectives and actions that we've outlined in this plan.
You can learn more about the Monarch Butterfly Multi-Agency Working Group on the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's website at wildlife.ca.gov. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Want to be part of creating the news? KMUD News is looking for a new assistant news director to help create our nightly broadcasts and public affairs content. This position is a hybrid position requiring weekly in-person work at our studios in Redway. The assistant director will double both as a reporter, creating their own stories, while assisting the news director with running the department. Department tasks include emails, story leads, working with our team of freelancers, and being part of the KMUD Emergency Response Team. This is a highly versatile role and will likely grow over time. If you're interested or want more details, check out the listing on our website. You can send a cover letter and resume to april@kmud.org. Next, Caltrans has an update on road conditions and closures.
This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Del Norte County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, May 15th. On 101, expect delays near the Klamath River Overflow Bridge, the High Prairie Creek Bridge, and near Edwards Beach Road. Expect up to 20-minute delays weekdays in Smith River from Rowdy Creek Road to East Denny Lane. On 199, expect up to 10-minute delays near the Middle Fork Smith River Bridge. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Humboldt County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, May 15th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west to Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans Sister Juan social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect up to 10-minute delays north of Willow Creek. On 101, expect delays north of Warwick. On 169, expect up to 15-minute delays near Martins Ferry. On 255, expect delays at the Mad River Slough Bridge on the 18th and 19th. Expect nighttime delays in Arcata between F and K Streets. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays east of Blue Lake and from east of the Redwood Creek Bridge to west of Chesham Road. Expect delays near the East Fork Campground. This is a Caltrans Sister Juan Road Information Bulletin for Lake of Mendocino County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, May 15th. In Lake County on 20, expect up to 10-minute delays in Lucerne from Grove Street to Ogden Road. Expect overnight delays in Middletown at Wardlaw Street on the 19th. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect delays from Fish Rock Road to Iverson Road starting on the 18th. Expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect delays in Fort Bragg near Airport Road on the 20th. Expect up to 30-minute delays south of Westport at the Blues Beach Trailhead to Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge and near the Juan Creek Bridge. On 20, expect delays east of Fort Bragg and west of Willits. On 101, expect overnight delays in Hopland. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays east of US 101. Expect delays from east of the Rodeo Creek Bridge to east of Sandbank Creek. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Michael McCaskill, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.